Oh, boy. Hello, and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers.
What?
And we're broadcasting this week from the new Luddite support group here at Car Talk.
Well, I don't want to talk about Luddites, but here's an interesting thing. A German motorist, actually, for some strange reason, driving a BMW, drove into a river. And here's why. A German motorist obediently following the satellite guided navigation system of his car drove straight into the Havel River in Eastern Germany, police said on Saturday. He drove his BMW past a stop sign, down a ramp, and about 4 meters into the river before stopping. Nobody was hurt. He was following the system, which had failed to note that the road in the town of Kaputh near Potsdam ended at a ferry crossing. So the thing says, they're great. You press the little button to where you want to go.
Proceed for 1.3
kilometers. 1.3
kilometers.
Right turn, 0.2 kilometers. Right turn, 0.1 kilometers. And he takes the right turn down the ramp, and the ferry is supposed to be there to take him across the river. He just drives right in. If there is ever poetic justice, that's it.
Indeed.
I love it.
Is that what you wanted to talk about? I thought you wanted to... I had the feeling that
you were
going to rant and rave.
I'm in the process of working on... As you know, I am being made crazy by just about every technology, and I think
Tell
we have to
truth.
Go back.
It all started with his printer. My brother's printer... What's the technical term?
STB.
Crapped out. And for a week, he couldn't get his printer to work because he couldn't find the right wire.
Yeah.
Is that the gist of it?
Well,
is that the gist of it or not?
That was the most recent occurrence. I've had these episodes in the past when every once in a while, what happens is all the technology dies at once. The fax machine stops working. The answering machine stops working. The computer stops working. And you realize that you are being held hostage by these technologies.
Yes. Well, worse than that, we have entrusted our futures to the nerds.
We trusted them. They said, don't worry. This will make you happy. Do this. Follow us. We're a bunch of jerks. We're like the cult leader comes out and says, follow me into the river. Follow me. And we, like little lemmings, we go, okay. Whatever you say.
And
I'm fed up with it, frankly. Why should the geeks take over my life? We're going to have, and I'm working on the details.
I knew I could get it going. You know, just push a few buttons. Right. What did it take, right?
We're going to have, I'm trying to organize a No Geek Week. An entire week in which we refuse to do what the geeks have led us into. Fax machines, email, internet. Come on, the telephone wasn't good enough.
Was good enough for Don Amici.
You bet it was. Oh, man. Don't get me started.
I apologize profusely to everyone listening. If there is anyone still listening, if you'd
listening.
Like to talk to us.
That's the good part of it. You know nobody's listening.
I know. Thank God. If you'd like to talk to us about anything at all, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Guys, this is Red Barker from Trenton, New Jersey.
Hey, Red.
Red. Trenton, New Jersey.
Well, listen to this.
Yeah.
Last May, I'm driving around the corner from my house. I've got my daughter in the car, and we see a beautiful, big, baby blue convertible on this lawn.
Yeah.
And it's got a sign in it that says, are you ready for summer? I immediately slam on my brakes, hang a U-turn, jump out of the car, say, no, I'm not.
A baby blue what convertible?
1975 Pontiac Granville.
Oh, what a car.
A beautiful car with a white leather interior, brand new white top, brand new paint job.
No.
So I buy the car. And I pick up my buddy and his kids and my daughter, and we go on our maiden voyage and smoking a couple of big cigars in front of this car.
You're saying it doesn't get any better than this.
That's right. And the kids are loving it. And then all of a sudden, there's smoke coming up from the floor.
Oh.
So we pull over. The floor of the car burst into flames.
The carpet, that is.
The carpet. So we stop at the 7-Eleven. We get a gallon of water.
Who says that American cars aren't exciting? This would never happen in a Toyota. This
never.
Is the point I've been trying to make all these years. You could drive a Toyota for 100 years. You would never have this kind of excitement. So you run into the convenience store. You get a gallon of water. They charge you a buck for it.
And we proceed to drive home while pouring water on the floor.
This is great.
I love it.
What was on fire anyway?
Well, it turns out that being so old, I guess the floor was rusted through.
Of course.
And there was a tiny little hole. And yeah. The catalytic converter, somebody must have ran over something, was pushed up close to the floor. And the heat from that caused the rug to catch on fire.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, that car had to have no floor.
So I take it back to the two brothers who had been fixing the car for 25 years. And I said, well, you know, maybe we need a new catalytic converter. I said, it looks like it's got holes in it. Nah, you don't need that.
Nah. We'll put a couple of pieces of sheet metal up there and protect the rugs.
Well, first they said we're going to crank it down so it's further away from the floor. And then we're going to weld a piece of sheet metal under the floor.
Got it.
Okay, so.
Makes sense to me.
No more fire. But my girlfriend cannot ride in the car seated next to me. She says this car is putting out too much heat.
It's you that's putting out the heat, Red.
So when I drive the car in the summer, she has to sit in the back seat.
Oh, that's no fun.
No. If I wanted to be a chauffeur, I would have got a different job.
Well, the catalytic converter is right under, you know, on that car, if I'm not mistaken, right under where the passenger's feet would be.
Yes, it is.
And while there may be nothing technically wrong with the converter in terms of, you know, holes and such, and it may be far enough away from the floor, I'd be willing to bet the converter is probably plugged up.
Well, it's the original converter. I know that.
I think there are two things going on. I think the converter's no good, and I think the timing is retarded.
Ah, that could be. How's it running?
The car runs great. I had 9 kids in it, taking them to the shore. I had the car in the Elks parade.
Did the Elks like it?
They loved it. They loved it.
Red, what do you do for a living?
I'm a criminal defense attorney.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? And you have a seemingly a pretty good outlook on life. You seem like a happy-go-lucky guy. Or are you just a nut?
He's a criminal lawyer, or is that redundant? Well, you are living the dream, Red.
But I would put a new converter in, but have the ignition timing checked. I bet you over the years they've retarded the timing to make the thing pass some kind of emissions test or whatever. Have them check the timing, put it to spec, put a new converter on there, a new style, honeycomb style converter, and that's going to fix the problem.
Yeah.
Have them install a heat shield too. They can rivet a piece of sheet metal in addition to the floor that they fixed. They can put another piece of sheet metal between the converter and the floor to act as a heat shield, so it will reflect the heat off the converter down
back
to the
down
pavement.
Instead of up.
All right, but that's not going to interfere with my relationship with my girlfriend.
No,
not at all.
Okay.
See you, Red.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy
Good
your
luck.
Car.
Bye. Bye.
Are you ready for summer? That's the sign. See, the right marketing.
So when you want to get rid of the dart.
Mm.
No, the sound of the darts is how you're ready for the junkyard.
Are you ready for the junkyard? No, I'm not.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Denise from Chicago.
Denise,
hi. I know your brother, the nephew.
Oh, I haven't heard that one before.
I bet. What's up?
I have a 1989 Honda Civic.
No kidding.
I'm, you know, obsessed with learning about it and what it's doing, and I only didn't pay much for it, but it seems to be running well. The only problem is that when I turn, it makes a creaking sound, and it sounds like it's coming from the left side. It's almost like an old door.
A real creak.
Yeah, a real creak. It's not squeaky. It's not overly metallic sounding.
Yeah.
It's just like an
And this happens when you take a left, a right, or either turn.
Mostly a right turn, but it does happen on both. It doesn't happen all the time.
And does it do it if you turn the wheel left or right without moving?
No. Only when I'm moving.
Then I don't know what it is.
I give up. See ya.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we had you on the ropes there for a while. But the bell rang and the round's over. So. Well, I think, here's what I think it is. I mean, I think if you're making a right-hand turn, if the noise comes from the left, mm-hmm. it's probably because you have a bad ball joint. And what I mean by that is the ball joint grease has somehow escaped.
Okay.
And you're hearing the ball grinding against the socket because the socket has plastic in it, and you're getting that. And I bet you if someone were to lean on that fender, you know, when you make a right-hand turn, the car kind of leans to the left.
Right.
If someone were to lean on that fender and push it down and then you turn the wheel, you'd get the same noise.
Okay.
And you can ask your mechanic to do this and listen to the inner and outer tie rod ends mm-hmm. and the ball joint. Those are the only pieces that it could be.
Okay.
And you've got to have it looked at right away.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, it has the potential to be dangerous because once the grease escapes, there's a lot of friction in those joints.
Yeah.
And if they're forced to work without grease, then pretty soon the ball will be able to escape from the socket and a wheel could fall off.
Okay, yeah, because I haven't been driving it on the freeway or anything like that because I'm scared.
Terrified. You should be.
Good. Good.
It's good
for
you. It's good to be scared.
Yes, terrified is a good word.
Terrified is
but
good.
But get it looked at right away. And,
okay.
And I'm guessing it'll be the outer tie rod end.
Okay.
That's a guess.
On the left side.
Of course.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Denise.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Tracy Scheuer, and I am from Litchfield, Connecticut.
What's shaking?
Well, I think my problem is my husband, but he thinks the problem is me, so we thought, I thought I'd let you guys decide.
We will. You.
Well, you know, it's a new year, Tracy. I just have to warn you that I turned over a new leaf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh.
What's your new leaf?
The new leaf is I'm siding with the guys.
Oh, wow. No.
Too many death threats. I can't take it anymore. I mean, you don't realize how many times I've been punched. Some guy broke my glasses the other day and didn't even have the decency to take them off my head before he did it.
Oh, no, don't worry. My husband's a pretty nice guy.
We'll see about
that. He's stubborn, but he's nice. Okay. We have a very big difference in opinion on how to brake when you're slowing down for a red light or a stopped car in front of you.
Yeah.
When I was growing up and learning to drive, my father taught me that when you're going to stop, you gently lift your foot off the gas and come basically to a rolling stop, and you apply the brake as needed, but you don't slam on the brakes. And that was not only for safety, but he said it conserved on the brakes.
He's right.
Okay. Well, there you go. You answered my question.
Wait a minute.
That was a trap. I knew it was a trap.
Your husband might be right also. Go ahead.
Okay. My husband has what he calls a conservation of momentum theory.
I like it already.
It sounds like an MAS thing. Male answer syndrome.
Well, conservation of momentum.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I'm curious to see how this manifests itself in braking. But go ahead.
Okay. He thinks that if he continues at his current rate of speed until the absolute last moment possible, he runs the chance that he won't have to stop at all, therefore he won't need to use the brakes.
This is not a conservation of momentum theorem that he's got here. This is a quantum theory that he has, because it's based on probability.
Right, exactly. Well, he's an actuary. He works in probability.
Of course.
Yeah.
He's also wacko.
Well, see, this is problematic because we have, for a couple different reasons, safety being one of them, but he's not interested in safety. He's interested primarily in how he is conserving his brakes. And we have a small dog that travels with us a lot, and we found that small...
You keep scraping them off the windshield.
Exactly. Small dogs are very aerodynamic. So it's gotten to the point where if the dog sees a red light in front of us, he dives under the seat.
That's good.
It's only a matter of time before the dog starts puking. I mean, the dog's been relatively restrained up to this point, but sooner or later, he's going to start blowing chunks.
And hopefully it'll be all over your husband's pants, because God knows he deserves it because he is a wacko.
Okay. Well, see, and you're still siding with the man because you're siding with my dad, too.
I was thinking of that.
Yes,
yeah.
How convenient.
How convenient.
So it works out both ways.
It works out both ways. But, well, I mean, at least you had the common sense to understand that your father was right. Your husband has no common sense at all.
And it was your guarantee that your husband was nonviolent. That's
what really did it, yeah.
Yeah, my theory is that he likes to change the brakes because it's kind of a hobby of his. He changes them about every other month.
That should give him some clue that his theory of conservation of brake momentum is wrong.
Yeah, practice this. Hurl, Fido, hurl. See you, Tracy.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
All right, dummy, do you remember last week's puzzler?
Well, is a bear Catholic? Is the Pope Italian?
It had to do with kingdoms, knights in shining armor, and fair maidens named Mabel, or maybe Rowena.
Really?
I'll have the answer in just a minute.
And even though chimpanzees pray for opposable thumbs so someday they can turn off their radios when they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a teacher with a class of really rotten students you want to punish.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's historic and folkloric puzzler.
I still don't remember it.
As I said, this comes from the days of knights and kings and fair maidens named Rowena. And here's the story.
Yeah.
Rowena, the fair maiden, of course, like all fair maidens, wishes to wed, and her father, the evil king, Dougie, has devised a way to drive off suitors. He puts three boxes on the table, okay? Uh-huh. One is made of gold, one is silver, and the third is lead. Uh-huh. Inside one of these boxes is a picture of the fair Rowena. And The knight's job, without opening the boxes, naturally, is to pick the one with Rowena's picture in it.
If he wants to buy some pictures of Rowena, I got some. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, never mind.
I'm sorry. Did I interrupt?
No. So he has to pick the one with Rowena's picture in it, okay? If he picks the box with the picture, he gets Rowena's hand in marriage. Mm-hmm. Anyway, on top of each box is an inscription, and here's what they say.
I remember this now.
Okay?
Yeah.
The gold box says, Rowena's picture is in this box. Mm-hmm. The silver box says, Rowena's picture is not in this box. The lead box says, Rowena's picture is not in the gold box.
I love this.
Don't you love this stuff?
These are great puzzles.
So Evil King Dougie gives our knight one hint, because as it's currently set up, you can't solve it.
Oh, no, of course not.
He stipulates that only one of the inscriptions is correct.
Yeah.
You got it? One is correct, and the other two are incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you look at one and three, they're contradictory.
Yes. What does that mean?
Well, they say the opposite.
I know that, but what does it mean in terms of the truth?
Well, it means that one of them must be true.
One of those two statements must be true. Yeah, because if they say the opposite.
All right, then let's go.
No,
let's assume.
Wait, I like this, because if one of them is true, the gold box can't be true. The inscription on the gold box cannot be true, because if it is, then the inscription on the silver box must also be true.
And that can't happen.
And that can't happen.
So the first
statement on the third box, the lead box, is the only one that can be true. I love it.
The statement on the third box is the only one that can be true. The first one must be false. And the second box, which says Rowena's picture is not in this box, that is also false, which means that her picture
is in that box.
The silver box.
I love it. I love it.
So it means the picture must be in the silver box.
You know, you tell me that geometry is better than this at teaching people how to think.
It's easier to explain.
Maybe it is.
That's why they teach it.
I think all of grammar school and high school should be puzzlers. Have nothing to do with algebra. I mean, trigonometry, the area under a curve. Who cares? This is thinking, man. I still don't get it.
There is someone who did get it.
Who's that?
I don't know. Who's our winner?
The winner is Greg Fry from Scottsdale, Arizona. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers, Greg gets a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, where he can sweep through the aisles of our virtual CarTalk supermarket and grab all of the CarTalk junk. I mean, merchandise.
yes, that get it right.
Wants. Up to a limit, of course, of $26.
That would be like one T-shirt, right?
If it's on sale, yeah.
Anyway, we have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so stay tuned. If you have a question about your car, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Linnea from Asheville, North Carolina.
Hi, Linnea. I'm going to...
L-I-N-E-A.
No.
So close.
That's line A.
That's exactly right.
Oh, two N's.
L-I-N-N-E-A-H.
H.
No H.
Oh,
okay. L-I-N-N-E-A.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, that's not bad.
Hey, where are you from, South Carolina?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville North, one of those Carolinas. Okay, cool.
You know our friend who lives there?
Rick Boyer?
Of course.
You're lying.
It is a small town.
Anyway, Linnea, it's been a great chatting with you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What do you want?
Call again when you have anything else to discuss.
You have a problem?
I do.
All right.
I have a 2004 Jetta TDI wagon that I adore.
Yeah.
And whenever it's even slightly wet outside, only when I'm reversing, the brakes squeal like I have run over a pig.
Uh-huh.
And it's awful. And I understand about how when brakes get wet, they rust. But the interesting parts of this are that it only happens when I'm going backwards.
Uh-huh.
To the point where I'm, backing out of a parking space and people around me in a shopping center or whatever will stop what they're doing and stare at my car to make sure that I haven't actually run something over.
And have you checked, is it true that you haven't actually run something over?
I can tell. There's no bump associated therewith.
Does this happen only one time, the first time you step on the brake?
No.
And how many times would you have to back up, do you think, before
it didn't do it?
Probably twice. So, which tells me that it's probably rust being worn off.
I don't think it's rust, because let's say you drove the... I'm assuming you drove the thing someplace,
mm-hmm.
and you parked it, like you were in a parking lot. You went to a store.
Right.
And you came back from the store.
And it was raining in the meantime.
Right.
Exactly.
So it was raining. How long were you at the store?
Well, for instance, if I drive to work or something and I go out for something and it's, been about an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe, it won't happen if it's a 10-minute stop.
Right. It won't happen. But I got to say that it's unlikely that anything is rusting in an hour and a half.
Well, so then we get to the philosophical question of why only backward and how do I make it stop?
Yeah.
Well,
that requires an understanding, a deep understanding of how all the brakes work, what all the pieces are, and what happens when it rains.
Now, I don't know.
None of which we have.
Well, this car, I believe, has disc brakes on all four wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does.
And usually what causes this kind of a noise is not the action of the brake pad against the disc.
Really?
Where the rust might be. No.
But the wheel turning.
It's what's causing it is when the wheel turns and the pad is moving against the bracket that holds it.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that, in fact, when you're going forward, the motion of this thing doesn't allow enough vibration to make the squeaking.
Okay. Okay.
But the springs, there are actually two metal spring clips that hold the pads in place. Mm-hmm. They might be worn out.
Ah.
Such that when you go in the opposite direction, it's not damping the movement of the pads.
Got it.
And it doesn't take much of a movement to get that god-awful squeal.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, it's ear-piercing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it makes it good so your husband can't sneak out in the middle of the night.
Well, maybe I should keep it this way so that when my boys are older, I'll know when they try to back out of the garage.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
But I would say take this thing to your dealer or to your repair shop.
Sure.
And have them, the first thing I would do is deglaze the brakes. They'll clean off the rotors and the pads, and they'll put a grease. There's a grease we use, and most shops do, that goes behind the pad.
Okay,
The metal backing of the pad that doesn't touch the disc rotor. And what that does is it allows everything to move without setting up this oscillation that makes this high-pitched squeal.
Sure.
So if you tried that, that might work. If that doesn't work, they can change the brake hardware.
Okay.
And that should fix it. And if that doesn't fix it, then I give up.
There we go.
Good luck, Linnea.
Thank you very much, guys.
See ya.
Yep.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Paul in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hey.
Hey. All America City.
Yeah, how are y'all doing?
We're doing great. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing good, too.
What part of Somerville are you from?
I'm in West Somerville.
Where's that?
My brother knows Somerville like the back of his head.
Does he?
What's West?
It's near Davis Square.
Oh!
Yeah, right over there.
Oh, the center of the universe.
Oh, yes.
Cool.
And I'm doing what I can to help promote it that way, too.
Yeah, good for you.
Well, first I got to say that I'm recently relocated from Mobile, Alabama, where my dad listens to you guys religiously. So religiously, in fact, that last Christmas I got him all of your merchandising things.
You did?
He got a Car Talk mug and a Car Talk book and a Car Talk this and that.
Oh, you're the guy! You're the guy who bought all that stuff!
Well, he tried to send it back.
But... yeah, no, we close right after. As soon as you buy the stuff, we
close. Oh, yeah. You have a close-out sale? That's it. We have a close-up sale.
So what's up, Paul?
Well, let's see. I bought a Plymouth Grand Voyager the other day. That was actually originally built in 1988, so it's really old, and it's got a lot of miles on it.
Mm.
The problem with the van is that when it's idling, it goes everywhere from, it jumps up to 2,000 RPMs, and it dips all the way down to, you know, very low, sometimes so low that it just dies on me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I really can't afford to just take it into a mechanic and say, you figure out what's wrong.
Mm.
If there's some sort of... history of this? I mean, could this be something as simple as spark plugs, or could this be a cracked cylinder head? Or...
Keep going. Nothing rings a bell yet. You got any other ideas?
No. That's why I call on you.
How does it run? I mean, other than idling poorly or peculiarly, does it seem to have good power? Can you climb hills with it?
Yes. It seems to have really good power. You know, it does fine off the start. It goes up hills. I load it down with all kinds of music equipment, drive all over town, and it runs fine.
And... every time you come to a stop, like at a traffic light, even though if you've been driving for a half an hour, it will do this business of going...
No. If I've been driving for a long time and come to a stop...
It's better.
It's better, but if I sit at that stop for a minute and a half, it starts up again.
This is a V6 engine?
Yes.
And it didn't do this when you test drove it before you bought it?
Test drove it?
You didn't test drive it, huh?
Yeah, let's move on.
You went for color, right? You went for color and shape.
Let's move on.
It was a Thursday afternoon, and I needed the van by Thursday night.
Yeah. Do the words "looks good enough to me" ring
exactly.
a bell? Okay, that's fine. You don't have to.
And has the check engine light ever come on when it's doing this erratic?
No.
Idle.
Only when it dies.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
the lights come on.
Yeah.
Have you opened the hood at all?
Yes.
No.
All kinds of new stuff.
Did you hear anything peculiar under there?
Well, actually, when I first got it, when it was idling and even accelerating, I would hear like it sound like a whistle almost.
Oh, I love it.
Good.
That's gone.
Paul, you know,
that's
you
gone?
Have given us.
It's gone, he says. The noise is gone.
The whistling is gone.
That's okay. That's all right. That's all we needed was the sucking sound of a whistle.
Ah.
Because you gave all the right answers.
Okay.
You know, after 15 or 20 minutes of driving, does it still come? Is it still there? No, it's not. But if I sit there for a while, it comes back and boom, 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 boom.
Mm-hmm.
And do you hear any noises? You get all your answers were absolutely correct. So thanks for calling, and I wish you the very best. Well, I was pursuing my hunch. Mm-hmm. My brother's going to agree with me on this.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard my brother agree with me? No.
Not yet.
He's going to agree.
My brother is going to say it's a vacuum leak. But
okay.
He's
not going to agree with me. No. You're not going to agree with me?
I can't.
The guy gave every correct answer to my question.
I just can't. I can't. In all fairness.
in all good faith. Really?
I just can't.
Would a vacuum leak also affect the cruise control?
Yes.
Yes.
The cruise control does not work.
Oh, that hasn't worked for 5 years, bro.
Guy has.
Forget the cruise.
Paul has answered every question.
The engine's ready to blow up, and he's worried about the cruise control. This is a guy that didn't even test drive. Oh, sorry.
He said, "Let's move on."
All right, we've moved on.
Yeah.
Well,
in spite
of your poor judgment, I'm going to tell you how to extricate yourself from this mess.
Excellent.
If you sit at the wheel
and
turn the key on and off, don't start it, but go from off to on, off on, off on, rapidly within a period of about 15 seconds.
Okay.
And then leave the key on. You'll notice the check engine light will light up.
Okay.
And then it'll begin to flash. And you'll get one long flash for the tens digits.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then quicker flashes for the ones column.
Gotcha.
So, for example, you'll get 1-2 and then 1-1, which is code, 1-2-1, which is code 21.
Got it.
You'd get 1-2-1-1, which is code 22.
Okay. Yeah.
And they will come up in sequence.
All right.
Okay. So you won't get a code 13 after you've gotten a code 27.
Got it.
And if you miss it, you can continue to get the codes because they'll just keep coming back. And the last code you will get is 5-5.
Okay.
So you'll get 5 flashes followed by a short pause followed by another 5 flashes.
That means I'm done.
Okay.
Then you can go someplace, maybe like your neighborhood gas station, and ask them if they can tell you what these codes mean.
Okay.
And then you can start experimenting yourself. I suspect that one of them is going to come up a bad map sensor.
All right.
Okay, or a bad throttle position sensor.
Okay.
We haven't used that for a while.
Well, these are common problems that these vehicles have.
All right.
So, and then you can try replacing these things on your own, but be aware of the fact that they may not fix it because you don't have the whole diagnostic chart in front of you. You're just
right.
going by the seat of your pants, but I can tell you're not the kind of guy that does that. I mean, you don't go off half-cocked and just do something.
He's
a studied guy.
He plans things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you want this to help you, you got to have a little bit of luck on your side.
Okay.
And he will, because he's a musician.
Exactly.
God watches over musicians, because musicians need all the help they can get.
Oh, better still. Wait
and
a minute.
Paul knows that.
Disregard all the above. Okay.
Yeah.
The next non-rainy Saturday afternoon,
mm-hmm.
drive over to Nissenbaum's Auto Recycling Universe.
Yeah.
Okay, and you can go there, and you can they'll direct you to the section of the Dodge Caravan Plymouth Voyagers, and you can merely take off a map sensor off one of those vehicles and put it on yours.
Okay, that's cool.
So you can buy a map sensor and a TPS and maybe a few other goodies.
Okay,
you know, for a few bucks.
My car before this van was a Fiero, so I visited junkyards.
Oh, you know how to do this. Okay,
yeah.
So you can find a couple out in the yard there. And take these pieces off.
Okay.
And with any luck, one of them's going to fix it.
Well, great.
What do you play, Paul?
What do I play?
Yeah.
Drums and guitar, mostly.
What kind of music? Loud?
Yeah, rock.
Yeah, loud.
Rock. Hey. Well, welcome to Somerville, Massachusetts, and good luck, man.
Thank you very much, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Y'all take it easy.
All right, Tommy, it's that time of the show again.
Is this the part where the underwriters pull out, the station managers resign, and the staff begs for an overnight shift? Is that
no, that part? Usually happens in the first half. Is this time for us to take a little station break?
All right, we'll be back with a brand new puzzler in just a moment. How's that?
We will.
Well, there's a big open, it's older, it's been sitting there for days. The fizz is slowly dying out, around it there's a haze. Don't pay much attention to the wrappers on the floor. And the sunflower seeds and mouse chewed up are falling out the door. And I got boomerang, stuff and hang, struggle for the back grill. Get the strings, water wings, flowers for you. And still a newbie, yellow double crisscross, probably good gloves. You can find hardware, yardware, candles for stormy night, rice cakes, yard, rake, string, leather, fly, cat and mouse that I haven't got yet. And I hope he doesn't die. Well, my neighbor plays the tuba, it's been missing for while looking in my mirror. He didn't understand why it wasn't seen before. I said, take a look inside, my friend, my car's just like a store. And I got boomerang, strapping, hang, strapping for the back grill, get a strings, water wings, flowers for your windowsill, a newbie, yellow double crisscross polygrip gloves.
And even though kids ask their parents why there's no fast-forward button on the radio whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new, I'd have to call this historic, folkloric, automotive,
everything,
and militaristic.
Militaristic. Is it from the string series?
No, no, it's from
the hat series.
No, it comes from
the rock series.
No, it comes from WW2. Well, it has its roots.
Okay, go.
And this was sent in 4 or 5 times by a guy named Ed Wynn.
Ed Wynn, from, I know him,
Palmyra, Pennsylvania, and he says, I hope you'll reconsider this puzzle that I resubmit herewith. Anyway. I'm going to read it pretty much as
it's
he wrote
it. A five-page letter.
No, it's I read fast. Half of it's the answer, and the other half is background.
Oh, okay.
So it's 3 halves, but I'll do my best to condense it. Flashback to summer 1942. The British are battling the Germans and Italians for control of North Africa. In one of the towns under British control is an Italian civilian named Tony Cardiello. He refuses to submit to the British demand that they use his trucking company to transport supplies. Always willing to negotiate, the British seize the trucks and throw Tony into a detention camp.
That's a compromise.
Move ahead now to the late 70s. Here I was, out of college 3 years, doing the only thing that a political science grad could do to earn a living then.
Yeah.
I was driving a truck. It was a cold winter in 1978 when we experienced many days with the mercury at minus 20 in the morning. In those conditions, diesel engines, even the ones that had block heaters that were plugged in all night, just didn't want to start. Tony Cardiello was the morning mechanic for this trucking company.
The very same Tony?
And he was the one that we turned to when our big rigs wouldn't get up and go.
Oh, man.
He taught us that when a truck wouldn't start, we shouldn't grind the battery down to nothing. We should try it for a few seconds, and if it didn't start, we should leave enough juice for him to help us for a second try. When we went crying to him about a truck not starting, his first question would be, did you bless the truck? When we stared at him, he'd repeat, did you bless the truck? When we said, no, we didn't bless the truck, he'd walk over to it, face the bulldog ornament on the hood, make the sign of the cross, and he'd say, now you started the truck. And 9 out of 10 times, the truck would kick over, and we'd be on our way.
Wow.
The worst part was that when we tried this ourselves, we'd get there in the morning, we'd bless the truck, hop in, turn the key. It never started.
Really?
Did he have some connection to God forged through his experience in that camp? Or had he stored up so much of that North African heat that he was radiating into the engines? He never let on. He just blessed the truck and walked away, sure of his power, saying over his shoulder, now you go. Good luck. The question is, how was Tony Cardiello starting these trucks? By blessing them, when in fact, these guys couldn't do it themselves. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the back of a deed to a 4-bedroom oceanfront condo on South Beach with wraparound Palazzo Terrace, rooftop pool, and in-room telescope. The kind you put the quarters in. And send aforementioned deed to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or, of course, you can email your answer from cartalk.com. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. That's the number to call if you'd like to converse with us.
Or if you wouldn't.
You're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Julie from Caldwell, Idaho.
Hi, Julie.
Where, Idaho?
Caldwell.
Yes, Caldwell.
Oh, Caldwell.
It's close to Boise.
Idaho.
What's up?
My husband has a very strange problem. His key for the ignition got stuck in his car door and actually broke off. The tip of the key broke off in the door. And so now he can't open his car door on the driver's side. Every time he wants to get into the unlock the car, he has to go around to the passenger side, open the passenger door, get inside, lean across, unlock the driver's side, get back out, go back around the car, and that's how he gets back in.
Well, if he had saved the broken half of the key, he wouldn't have this problem.
Well, no, he did.
He's in there.
And he put super glue on it, and he stuck it in there and tried to get it to stick, but it didn't work.
No, but it doesn't have to stick. You can just put the broken piece of the key in there, and the door should unlock.
Oh, really?
I've done it.
You have?
Certainly.
Wow.
Because, I mean...
On what car? Which car have you owned in recent memory that you have locked?
No, I haven't done it in a car door. I've done it in a door.
Like a house door.
A house.
What kind of a car is this?
It's a 92 Mercury Tracer.
I mean, have you considered the traditional routes of repair here? You could, for example, call a locksmith.
Okay.
I assume that you don't want to spend any money to do this. Oh. Otherwise, you would have done that a long time ago.
Of course not. That's why we were calling you.
That's why you're calling us. She said if anyone knows a cheap, easy way out of this, it's those two morons from Boston.
Exactly. That was my reasoning exactly.
I knew it was.
So the broken piece is still in the lock on the driver's side.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Here's what you do. Okay. You get a paper clip.
Okay.
One drop of super glue.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You put it into the lock.
And you hold it there
for the
required 20 seconds.
For whatever time it takes.
All right.
And then you extract, maybe, the paper clip, the super glue, and the broken piece.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be elegant?
That would be elegant.
Alternatively, you will have a paper clip sticking out of the side.
Which is very likely. And your fingers will be stuck to the paperclip.
Now, I have never, ever tried this, but I have heard from Howie that it works.
Okay.
Howie is a mandolin player.
Who happens to work at our shop fixing cars and who has these home remedies.
For everything.
Yeah, most of them we won't let him do at the shop. But this may work, Julie.
Okay.
I would give it a shot.
Okay.
I mean, if that doesn't work, you can always just replace that, you know. You can have a locksmith come and either pull that piece out or replace the whole lock on that side.
Okay.
And you'll have three keys for the car.
Okay, thanks a lot.
See ya.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Good luck.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Peter, and I'm in Mill Valley, California.
Hi, Peter.
Peter.
I'm really good, gentlemen. How's yourself today?
We're not bad. I have no complaints.
Well, you should complain.
Why?
Because it's worse than you think it is.
What are you, a psychiatrist?
Psychologist.
Ah, see? I could tell. So what's up?
Well, I've got a 1986 Honda Accord, fuel-injected.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is... driving out in California in kind of our nominal inclement weather when it's like 60 or 70 degrees, and I ride short distances, and then I stop, and the cooling fan comes on, and it won't go off.
What's the longest time it's ever run for?
Well, you know, I don't sit by it and time it, but it'll go on for like 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Have you called the Guinness people? I mean, there may be money in this.
Well, only the Guinness stout people.
Well, you know, it's supposed to come on.
You know, I'm looking at the temperature gauge, and
it's dead cold, and the thing's still running.
It's pretty cold, and it's still running. It's got short distances on it. If I get in the car and then turn on the ignition, I don't start the motor, but I just engage that contact.
Right, and then shut it off.
Then the fan will go off.
Right. Well, there are a lot of choices here.
Yeah.
To fix it, there is a cooling fan timer device, which works in conjunction with the fan and the switch that's in the radiator. You have a switch that's screwed into the radiator that reads the radiator temperature.
Uh-huh.
But that sends a signal to this timer, which is located under the dash, right in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And that timer is supposed to run the thing for a predetermined amount of time after the thing shuts off, almost regardless of what the temperature is.
Ah.
So you need to replace that timer unit.
Okay.
It's called the cooling fan timer. You can probably find one at a
an auto recycling center.
Mm.
You know what that is?
Junkyard.
That's where I take my cans and bottles.
That's the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might be able to do that, or you might have to buy a new one from the dealer.
Uh-huh.
But alternatively, you could do what you've been doing.
Uh-huh.
You know how to fix this by turning the key back on.
Correct.
So you could continue to do that.
If you were a real cheapskate and you didn't want to fool around with it.
Well, you got me, all right.
I think if you were willing to sit there for 1 minute after you stop the car.
I can do that.
And that during that 1 minute, you'd let the fan run, then you'd turn the key on, turn it off, and you'd leave the car.
It would be good if all cars had some kind of a peculiarity like this, which required people to sit there for a minute after they shut the engine off.
It'd really be a contemplative moment, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? I mean, all these people who are jumping out of the car. Think about all these frazzled and frenzied housewives and mothers jumping out of their little minivans to go somewhere and do something if they were obliged, required to sit there for 60 seconds.
Well, that would be the mandatory minute, wouldn't it?
The mandatory minute.
I love it.
I love it, too. Maybe we could get Detroit to do this for us. They owe us something.
Well,
God knows.
Certainly a computer chip could stall the car for at least 60 seconds while you contemplated.
Yeah, I'll lock the doors.
At least.
Lock you in. I like that.
I like locking the doors.
Well, good luck, Peter.
Well, thank you for your input
because we're gonna ponder this contemplative minute.
It'll be a beautiful thing.
What did you call it?
Meditative.
Meditative minute.
Yeah.
The mandatory meditative minute.
Mandatory.
3M.
3M.
Here it is.
Cool.
All righty.
Yeah.
See you, Peter.
Thanks so
the
much.
Magnificent mandatory meditative minute.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like that even better. 4Ms.
M&Ms.
Could be sponsored by M&Ms.
Could be sponsored.
You could eat the bag of M&Ms. That would take about a minute.
That's right. While the doors are locked.
This could be an ad campaign. This could be our ticket out of this dump. One...
The mandatory M&M meditative minute. That's 5 M's.
I love it. I'm telling you, there's big money here. You never listen to me. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Wendy calling from Iowa City.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi there.
Iowa City.
I don't hold out too much hope for your solving this. It might be closer to being a puzzler.
Oh, really?
I've tried everything.
Oh, boy, we love a challenge
like
that. Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
I have an 88 Honda Prelude four-wheel steering car that I love and plan to drive forever.
Now, that was a feature that really caught on, huh?
Hey, oh, yeah.
It's terrific. I love this car, except when my husband rides in it because he fogs it up. I mean, he fogs it up like mushroom soup on the inside of the windows or something.
Really?
Now, he doesn't do this in other cars.
He doesn't.
No, and nobody else does this in my car.
Wow.
Okay. Is he over 6 feet tall?
Oh, heavens no.
A little guy?
Oh, yeah. Well, short. And this, I can't tie it to a season.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried with and without the air conditioner on. I've tried the inside and outside intakes.
So you have it on fresh air.
Yeah, I've tried both. All combinations, all permutations.
Is there a chance that he's outgassing?
Yeah, I tell you, I don't think it's diet related. I don't think it's breath related. He seems to have a pleasant breath.
And he fogs up all the windows?
Oh, it's a matter of minutes. Can't see a thing. You can wipe it off all day. It fogs right back up again. Doesn't happen in his car.
So it makes no difference whether he's driving or riding as a passenger?
He could be sitting in the back seat.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, his head isn't wet or anything. I mean, he's not just out of the shower when he gets into your car. I mean, that would do it, you know.
No.
So he could get in the middle of the day.
Oh, sure. Anytime, day, night.
Anytime. And how long does it take for the fog up to occur?
Oh, 5 minutes. It starts.
And then even if you turn on the defroster?
Oh, yeah. You can.
That would take care of it, right?
Yeah, no. It does with other people.
Oh, it doesn't with him?
No.
It does not.
No, uh-uh.
This man is emitting some serious water vapor.
But only in my car?
Well, I think it's happening in your car
because
the Prelude is a relatively small vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And so if he is emitting large amounts of water vapor, it wouldn't happen in a larger, a vehicle which had a larger passenger compartment.
Okay, it doesn't happen in my son's Jetta.
Okay. Jetta's a little bigger than the
Prelude. Big.
How about if you left the windows open? I mean, if you left a window open.
Well, we've tried cracking the windows. We tried opening the skylight a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps a little?
No. Only that there's no fog where there's no window.
Yeah. You got to tell us more about him, then.
Here's the test.
Oh, gosh.
Well, here's the test. I mean, I don't know what it's going to tell you necessarily, but it's going to tell you something.
Uh-huh.
He needs a snorkel. You know the snorkels that you buy at the sporting goods store?
Excellent.
You need to have
excellent.
Oh, I love
breathe
it.
Out the window.
Yeah, I like it because we have to determine
is
the source of the moisture in his lungs or is it some other part of his body?
Okay. I think it's in his garments.
After this phone call, my problem might be solved. He might refuse to ride with me.
No, I mean, if we eliminate his breath,
okay,
that will open up all new possibilities. Then we can start talking about his clothing, his habits.
Okay.
Well, the next step would be he has to ride naked. But the first step is the snorkel. Do the snorkel.
Okay.
Call us back.
Okay.
And then we'll give you the next step.
All right.
Call us back next week.
Okay.
All right.
We'll talk to you, Wendy.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, you know what? It's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nicks, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Daly Perotti. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Puerto Plata Enchilada Veggie Strata Ensalada Carne Asada Empanada Gran Piñata and Coffee Colada Lunch for Nada, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Buzzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Our class attendance monitor is Julie Verley. Our director of preventive maintenance is Oscar Ruitt. Our snowboarding instructor from Sweden is Soren DeKeister. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our Working Mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the tenure-track falafel sellers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1302, meander through the Car Talk archives, or check out our 25th anniversary swag all over at cartalk.com. Also this week, it's open enrollment time for our Puzzler newsletter and our Time Kill Weekly.
Open enrollment? You mean like a health plan? Can't you just sign up for the newsletters anytime?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just trying to make it sound a little more exciting, you know?
Come on. You can sign up for our weekly email newsletters, the Puzzler Newsletter, or Time Kill Weekly anytime at cartalk.com.
Open enrollment closes soon, folks.
It does not.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR fire marshal takes a cursory look at our studio and mumbles, whatever, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.